It's a regular session. I'd like to establish a quorum.
Darren Ward.
Greg Jones.
Stu Martinez, present.
Kathy Aiken, present.
And Ken Mullins, the mayor's present. And we'll have our pledge allegiance at this time, and I'd ask Don Greiner, would you lead us, please?
I pledge allegiance to the flag of the United States of America and to the republic for which it stands, one nation, under God, indivisible, with liberty and justice for all.
Thank you, Don. Are there any added agenda items at this time? Hearing none. We'll enter the item five is the consent agenda. Are there any comments regarding the consent agenda?
Mr. Mayor, I need to state a conflict of interest with the bill payable we will reserve.
Let the record reflect his comments. Hearing no further, is there a motion to approve the consent agenda?
So moved.
Second.
It's been moved and seconded to approve the consent agenda. All those in favor?
Aye.
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 It's unanimous. At this time, we'd like to offer public comment period. Are there any public comments? Hearing none, I will proceed to presentation on the veterans rental housing. Mrs. Perry.
Yes, thank you.
For coming.
Thank you for having me and for having Cammie Davis is our volunteer in the Lapine office down here.
Nice to see you.
And I have some handouts if I may.
Please.
And there are six apiece. So one is a description of the property here in Lapine, and this is a HUD-owned property. And then this is just a letter acknowledging our partnership with City of Redmond and City of Lapine. So.
Thank you.
So can you hear me without the microphone, or should I?
It doesn't amplify much anyway.
Okay. Okay, so
it's more for show.
Okay, excellent. So I did bring a little PowerPoint today just to kind of show you COVO's work thus far and tell you a little bit about the history of the organization if you're not familiar. I myself have been there for 6 months. I was a licensed counselor with the VA for 6 years. That was prompted by my brother deploying to Iraq in 2003 for the invasion of Iraq as an attack helicopter pilot. And he has done two more tours as a medevac helicopter pilot, and he's still active duty Fort Carson right now. And I have a nephew in the Marine Corps and a grandfather who was a C-130 pilot and retired Air Force, flew in Korea and Vietnam, so I'm a little bit passionate about veterans and veterans issues, and that's how I ended up at COVO. And Rick is ready to start the presentation before I talk too much. So who we are, COVO was founded in 2005, and I have the honor to know most of the founding members. They're Vietnam veterans by the Ben Lapine Vietnam Veterans of America. And that started with them witnessing veterans on the street with signs saying homeless veteran and realizing that that was unacceptable and that we needed to do something to outreach to them and help them. And so they got together and created a nonprofit to begin to do that outreach and started as a little office in Bend and helping veterans with benefits claims as well as outreach into the camps. And the mission has very, very certainly grown over the past 5 years. So we kind of refer to our services right now as the four-legged stool. We've got our homeless outreach, which we do out in the camps. We have two programs that we offer that are really critical. We partner with the VA, and one of those is the Homeless Veterans Reintegration Program. That's job training for veterans who qualify as homeless. And I just want to point out, this is probably somewhere else in the presentation, that the definition of homelessness has evolved and changed over the past few years. So to include individuals who are couch surfing, living with their parents, do not have a permanent place to call their own and go home to every night. So this allows us to reach out to more veterans, which is really critical right now given the men and women coming home. And, you know, our mission right now is to really prevent that cycle of chronic homelessness. So the time to intervene is right now. And that's what our Supportive Services for Veteran Families, the SSVF grant, is. That's a one-time disbursement of funds to prevent housing. It's for rapid rehousing, and any veteran that's about to lose their home or, you know, can't pay their rent, can't pay their mortgage, can come into COVO, and that can be any veteran in the region. You know, CAMI, they can come into Lapine. They will be referred to that program and screened for eligibility, and they can get funding. And this is an excellent program. It's going to be expanding through the VA, and we just got very high marks and reviews from our grant officers, so we're really excited about that. And this just kind of says a little bit more, I think, about what I just said. I do want to note that we're looking at, you know, expanding and being innovative in terms of our outreach, because we know there's folks out in the camps and we know how to access them.
What's the numbers of the camps, tents, compared to what you call couch surfing?
What are the numbers?
Well, I mean, is it, yeah, not the actual numbers, I guess, percentages. I mean, is it 90% of these people are in tents?
I can give you an idea based on some of what my staff has told me, that the outreach program and some of the outreach volunteers say that probably about 10% of the folks they serve in the camps are vets. Now that can change at any given time because of transients. For our SSVF program, for the last 6 months, we've screened 100, I think, veteran families. So that's 6 months. And that's we've served, I think, actually through the grant after screening 60 families. So and that's just in the last 6 months. So this is just a picture of a camp and what that might look like. And Cammie and I were just talking about your area down here and some of the caves. And, you know, as we expand, we're also looking at having an office up in Madras. We're so huge right now, so we're looking at managing, but how do we expand across the region and do outreach in all the areas that we need to? So we'll keep having those conversations. I included this picture because it is a stark contrast to the last picture. And what we know, what I know, especially from working so closely with so many returning vets, is that they are very loath to ask for help. They have so much pride that they do not want to ask for help. So our mission to do that outreach is word of mouth. It's the community. It's going to start being Facebook and the internet. We have Facebook pages for our federal grants now. We want to go to festivals and just outreach to vets in any way we can.
One question. Maybe Ken, you can get a feel for it. What is, I think again that this is probably what a person like myself thinks. Are these vets, the 20, because the bulk of the kids who went to Iraq and Afghanistan mm-hmm. are 20, 25 year olds. Mm-hmm. Okay, are they the ones that are, or is this guys that were in the service 20 years ago and they're now in their 40s and 50s?
Are you talking about camps or in general?
All the property. Yeah, you're here for about camps, so I mean that's the issue. So.
Well, no, I'm here for the whole spectrum because we do the camps.
I just want to know, but the 22-year-old.
Those are the ones we're seeing
in a trailer.
The ones we're seeing with our SSVF grant are the ones that are on the brink. Those are the 20-somethings that are students at COCC that are barely scraping by with their GI Bill, that have young kids and families and can't get jobs because the economy here is not good. And so maybe they're just scraping by. But those are the ones that we want to capture, that whether they have PTSD, whether they have substance abuse issues, they're much more vulnerable and susceptible to end up like the long-term chronic individuals in the camps. The numbers, if you look at the VA national stats, the bulk of homeless are probably in their early 50s, and that is individuals who have reached a stage where they can no longer function in that lifestyle. You know, they've been able to hack it for 20 years, but they're getting too chronic.
And I'll add one comment. When COVO put their office, or we started a Lapine COVO office, there was an individual, 82 years old. He was living in a trailer, and he is a local piece of property, an individual who was letting him stay there and giving him sewer, water, and electricity. And when I went in this trailer, I've seen better dog pens. And he was content. Now, through several of us at Bound Band of Brothers, we got with the previous director, and found another trailer and set that up and got him in there and cleaned it up and made it livable. I mean, a nice little fifth wheel. But here's an 82-year-old yeah. gentleman that can't function. So
correct.
There's that piece.
And we're still helping him.
I know you are.
You know, the different things with the trailer. The trailer was older and it needed some pipe work and
the heater, all of
yeah.
that.
Yeah. So and we have done all of those things, and that's one of the things I'm proud of with him too, because he didn't. I think as they get older, a lot of these guys function for years. Like a lot of our Vietnam vets, they function for years, but they didn't understand why they had drinking problems or their marriages failed or other things, because they had PTSD and they didn't get any help. So they just can't. After a while, things just fall all apart. So we do have a large population of the veterans that are homeless because of that.
It's a spectrum, you know, and we have a huge mission, because we're looking at folks who have already been chronically homeless and then looking at preventing that from happening to a whole new cohort of veterans. So, and this is just the most current definition of homelessness, and I just want to highlight the first one, persons who lack fixed, regular, and adequate nighttime residence. And we can move on. I got it. Thanks. And this is our emergency transitional housing. I think I maybe didn't include that in our four-legged stool, that we have, you know, a spectrum, a range of services where we can offer at Bethlehem Inn. We subcontract with them 30 to 90 day housing, emergency transitional housing for veterans. We also have a house called Home of the Brave, which is five transitional beds for male veterans. Here we can house females and families. It's limited, but we have five beds right now and six, and it looks like it's probably going to increase in the next year or so. At Home of the Brave, that's 9 months to 2 year transitional lodging, and both places have case management for the veterans when they're there to help them get whatever resources they need. This is just an example of one of the rooms there. The regular Bethlehem Inn tenants or clients have six to a room. Our veterans, we work with the VA to be able to give them only two to a room, particularly because a lot of veterans are struggling with PTSD and have trust issues and don't do too well. That picture that you saw before, that is our Home of the Brave, where it says six bedroom. Right now we only have five. So that's Home of the Brave. And that is just a little description of that program and some pictures of the house there. And we actually just got a call from Home Depot today. We're going to be getting a little bit of a grant to help spruce up, because the poor guys at the Home of Brave, the air conditioning went out when we were having the 100-degree weather. And apparently it's just been fixed and fixed and fixed over the years, and it needs to be replaced. So fortunately, we might have some assistance with that. So this is just a little bit more about our permanent housing program rather than the transitional housing. And this is our housing for heroes in Bend off DeKalb, where we have three units of four-bedroom apartments. And these were, this is permanent supportive subsidized housing for vets and purchased with NSP money as well. And this is Wichita Way. It's a duplex. That's for female veterans, and we currently have female occupants in either side of that. And that's just a picture, you can't see it very well, but a female veteran and her husband and young boy who lived there, and that's coming back to Housing for Heroes, our units. And that is a Wells Acres house. That's actually right down the street from Home of the Brave, so that's another house that we can utilize for families. This is our Lapine house down here in Joy Road, and we'll just talk briefly about the other project that we're working on here. We have a veteran living, Iraq veteran living up in our home in Madras.
Huh. I wondered about that house. You must have just moved in there not long ago, didn't you?
It's been shortly after I got there, so about 5 months.
Yeah.
Yeah.
That was a bankrupt, I think it was a foreclosure sent there for.
Yes, correct. Mm-hmm. And this is our Prineville house, which we also just occupied. And this is the 10th Street, which is under renovation right now. And that's going to be six affordable units. It's community living, so they're studio, kind of little studio apartments, and we will have an on-site manager there as well. So, and this is just a little bit about, you know, Cobo's track record in providing housing to veterans. And so currently, as I was coming on board, there was the completion of an agreement between Cobo and City of Redmond and City of Lapine to expend NSP 3 funds for purchase of another property, either in Redmond or Lapine. And so, and the goal was to get one in each at least. So we did manage to locate a property which is a HUD-owned property, and that's the paperwork that you see for that house.
That's this document?
Correct.
Okay.
And the house was apparently built as a duplex, although that was never zoned for a duplex. So we've been kind of trying to, you know, figure out how we can work with that, because the original goal was to have it rehabbed back into a duplex and obviously be able to offer more housing for vets. And so I actually had a couple folks go down and look at the property and do an estimate for what a rehab would cost, and have talked with Heather Richards of the City of Redmond as well about moving some of the Activity A money to Activity B money, because for the acquisition it's about, I think it's 102 on there.
Right.
The rehab estimate was pretty high. It came in at about $68,000, and that was to add a new roof and add a new deck, and just that was probably a little over the top. And so we will be working with you guys and with Heather to talk about what's a realistic amount that we can rehab that, and is there potential that we can allocate it as shared housing rather than, you know, calling it a duplex, so that we could potentially have two, either, you know, individuals or a family and an individual or whatever the case may be, living in the property, so that we could optimize the use of it and the benefit. So that is where we're at right now.
Allison, is there anything that you want us to focus on today in this? Do we have any further?
I don't know what you will.
So this is just
an email, whatever you want from us. So
well, this is the, pardon?
This is Doe Lane, that's Huntington Meadows, isn't it? Or is it not?
No, that's Cable Doe is down
this
in
the last
here. But it's in this side.
Oh, it's outside the city limits?
Yeah.
This is more just to kind of just communicate about where.
Well, but I mean, you were mentioning planning issues, so I wonder if it's our planning issues.
Oh, I see.
City, we don't have any jurisdiction.
Correct. Well, I was told to approach the county, Deschutes County, and find out about the zoning.
Is this outside the city? You people that know the city? Okay.
Okay. So, yeah, so
I have a question. Is it on this side? If it's on this side, it is.
Well, it shows the cross street of Mastering Road.
Right, but one side, isn't one side of it out of city and one side is, or they both are?
Mastering Road is Klamath County.
Pretty much.
Okay. Because I thought,
how far
I meant the county.
It? Our city doesn't go
right across
half
from
a mile from here. Mm-hmm. So if you're down several miles.
No, it's where you have the cutoff.
The Mastin turn. You go down Mastin.
But you're talking miles south of town.
Yeah.
It's a mile.
No, I agree.
No, I'm asking if it, I don't know where the county line is, so I was just trying to figure out if it's.
Okay, if from where we're at, go south about 4 miles, turn right on Mastin Road, mm-hmm. and Doe Loop is across a street that makes a loop.
Map down the spot.
Out, I mean, you're
right.
Still like,
Mastin Road.
Can you find it? You got his finger on it right there. Yeah, that's well out of the city.
I was thinking of Mastin right here by 31.
It is.
It
that's
is.
That's it. But it's,
that's
I didn't think it was that.
Town.
It's a mile, right?
Well, maybe it comes back up or something.
But then you go out Mastin
Road. And it turns into Klamath County. You're right.
Correct. But you go out, and like I said, I don't know where the county line is. I'm just asking that question. Because you go down, it's like 30. The highway's right here. You go down, and then it comes back around towards this way. So I
bet the county would maybe let you duplex that.
Did the paperwork say?
Well, we've talked with Jim Long at the City of Bend, who has a lot of, you know, worked with us on a lot of these projects, and at first he was hopeful and approached someone at the county, and then he bounced back and he said, not going to happen, you just want to have it as shared housing. So I'm not ready to give up on it yet. I mean,
I go to Nick Wheelock.
Mm-hmm. Direct.
because we, I think that's where attached to that, where you guys could come in is to help advocate for the rehab funds, because it's my understanding that with these NSP three funds, that they have to be expended by a certain amount of time. And so my question would be, if some of that money's not spent, where does it go? And is it the case that we just need to spend it? And if we can make this a beyond habitable, you know, a nice long-term facility for veterans where we can provide them with really nice housing.
This will be a rental house?
Pardon?
This will be a rental house.
Correct. Where we're not paying constantly for repairs, that would be ideal.
I think a concern of the council is it in the city limits? You know, and the reason for that is our NSP3 is directly for the city.
No.
It can be outside the city?
This is this area.
Listed areas. There's.
Yeah, no. This can go there.
Okay.
It's not limited to the city limits.
Okay,
we're okay on that.
I misunderstood.
Okay, good.
Okay.
So that's,
we're clear.
Okay, good. Okay.
I'm actually sending an email to you. You guys keep talking to it. It'll be at Nick in 10 seconds.
So,
you just get this stuff done.
So you want to advocate for moving the money from A to B?
Heather.
What is it we need to do?
Probably just support the effort to get the rehab funds and help advocate for whatever. I mean, $68,000 might be too much, but. You know, Heather, it was Heather's suggestion that I come down here, and I think it was mostly just to kind of, as partners, to update you and talk about where we're at. And so at this point, I don't know if there's anything other than that advocacy piece that other than to just could the community support for the project in general.
Let me then ask the council if there's consensus that we support the advocation of this effort on part of COVA.
I would say yes, absolutely.
Okay. Council has consensus, and we'll let it work through our city manager.
Sending it right to the top guy. So. He's almost done.
Spell check.
Okay.
Well, we don't want to take up any of your time. That's not necessary. So I just want to thank you for having us today, and
appreciate you.
I've got a question.
Yeah.
A couple questions. Since we have the experts.
Yes.
And it's probably outside the scope of this whole thing, but with your figures and everything, with our returning veterans, with the homeless population, with all the, you know, the new syndromes that have arisen, I mean, a lot of the younger generation understands all that, but what has changed, and I know society has changed in a big way since our World War II veterans. Mm-hmm. We never had programs like this, mm-hmm. but yet look what that generation has done. So what's happening?
Are you saying what are the differences in the generations of veterans and that?
Is there any research on that?
That's a great question. I have my own perspective on it, which I'll share if you wish. Mm-hmm. My experience of working with different cohorts of veterans from, you know, very few World War II, but certainly Korean era, a lot of Vietnam vets and a lot of returning vets, and of course a lot of veterans that were in different campaigns that were special operations or Panama. I mean, you know, you name it. When you sit and listen to stories for 6 years, 8 hours a day, 5 days a week, you hear a lot of stories and learn a lot about the U.S. military. The World War II veterans were welcomed home as heroes. And there were programs there. There were housing programs for them. There were Forest Service jobs. There was a huge effort to get them jobs. There were parades in the streets. They liberated us from evil, you know. And the mission was very clear. And the men in uniform that they were fighting against were identifiable and were in uniform. And the country was behind the war effort. The country was working actively on the war effort on the ground at home while the troops were abroad fighting. Very, very different than Vietnam. And I shouldn't just skip over Korea, because that's called the Forgotten War, right? And so the Korean veterans, there was nothing for them. That's why they call it the Forgotten War. And there was some very interesting research that was done on anger, levels of anger in the different cohorts. And they were comparing anger levels in Vietnam veterans and Korean veterans. Well, to no veterans, you'd kind of think the Vietnam vets have the higher anger levels. No. It's like a child who doesn't get any attention. They're going to act out more because they didn't get that, you know. They'd rather have negative attention than no attention. So the Vietnam vets got very, very loud. And you know, you see Vietnam vets. You know who they are. The Korean veterans, you can't necessarily tell. But that's the Forgotten War. There was... You know, so now we have a lot more recognition of the Korean War than we ever have had. Flash to Vietnam. People are drafted. You know, people have plans for their lives that they've thought about. They have dreams, and then they get a draft card saying, you know, you're going to fight in a hellhole in Asia for a year. Girlfriends break up with them. You know, family members die. Children are born. And then you fight in... You know, and I was in Vietnam last year with a veterans group in June, and we traveled throughout the country from the north to the south. And then you come home and you get spit on and called a baby killer. So we've all seen the chronic issues that Vietnam vets have developed, like Cammie was saying. And when I first started with the VA, they said, oh, well, there's a profile of your typical, your classic Vietnam vet, divorced 3 times, substance abuse issues, and had about 20 jobs. Because it was untreated PTSD, and then you take that for 40 years and you take someone who's in survival mode for 40 years and you start to see patterns in the family and patterns with the grandkids. So you can see just in talking about that already the difference in how... So now we have this like blitzkrieg of information and awareness about how combat impacts individuals, and so... But yet we still have staggering suicide rates, you know, rates of PTSD. And we have another war where the enemy was not identifiable. And we have a healthcare system, which in my view is inadequate in treating our vets. It's one of the reasons I left the VA, because I no longer ethically felt that I was able to help them in a way that I felt I could. It's why I want to be an advocate for vets. We pathologize them. We tell them that they're disordered, and we medicate them. So you're a threat to society, and this is a little kind of out there. I realize I'm being recorded, but you know, we essentially send them to the VA, and we say we're going to put you on about, you know, 10 or 15 different meds, and we're going to manage you. So coming back to that pride piece, and coming back to, you know, how that relates to housing as well. My big thing when I was working with vets was trying to, which is what I love about COVO, give them that hand up, give them an opportunity, speak with them and talk with them in a way that's not a handout, we need to help you, you're disordered, you're disabled, but you're capable and there's a lot of potential for you, you're struggling, and let us be the hand that helps pull you forward so that you don't end up for the next 40 years. Living, you know, an isolated life that's disconnected from your family and from your children, and so. But this generation, these younger vets are very hard to capture. They're very hard. I've found that one-on-one, if you have some kind of connection to the military, a family member, if you are another veteran, that connecting, they're not going to the organized groups. They're just not. You might have a few at Band of Brothers, but you probably don't see a lot. And I go to the Band of Brothers sometimes in Bend, and they might come one or two times, but obviously it's a different cohort, right?
It's all old guys.
They're not, yeah, exactly. They're not seeing faces that look like theirs, you know? But yet, in my experience, and what I'm continuing to do is I'll get calls or emails or, you know, run into someone at Safeway that I worked with as a counselor, and keep that rapport and try to connect them to each other. You know, COCC, they're trying to get a vet group together. So slowly and over time it will happen, but so many vets don't want to be identified as veterans. You know, I was just at a vet council meeting in Bend today, and someone came down to talk about Madras Air Show. And he said, we have people out moving in the crowd because veterans aren't necessarily going to come up to us and identify themselves. Particularly if you're freshly back from war, from combat, and you're really raw, you're not going to go up and start talking to people about, yeah, I'm a vet.
That's true.
And I, you know, so it's So that's where I just think COVO too is so critical as a nonprofit. I mean, we have the potential to have just a huge voice and advocate for these vets. And eventually when they need to come out or they need to ask for help, we're there for them. We're there for them, so.
What's your email?
It's Allison, A-L-I-S-O-N.
A-L-I-S-O-N.
Correct. Dot Perry, P-E-R-R-Y. At COVO, C-O-V-O, dash.
Dash.
Correct, U-S dot org.
Just CCU.
Excellent.
So kind of what I told them, basically, that the city's, it's outside the city limits, but it's a grant program that the Redmond and Lapine teamed up to accomplish. It's a federal grant to purchase this home to allow a couple rentals. I told them, I think you need to arrange a meeting, tell this to him, you need to arrange a meeting with your staff to flush out the options. This guy that you talked to and Ben, he gave his opinion, but I think you do need to sit down with...
Well, he knows someone with the county and who's also a veteran, and Jim Long is a veteran, and he contacted him.
What I'm saying is you need to have a direct meeting with the county.
Yeah.
You can't really go through a third party, because they need to look you in the eye and tell you yes or no.
Right.
It's much harder
right.
to do. And, there are a lot of land use rules about stuff. Duplexes sometimes are considered, they've changed some of the rules. In some places, duplexes can be almost considered, it's kind of like the mother-in-law apartment, that type of thing. You could kind of, it might be possible, depending on how it's approved.
And depending, I guess, on what we call it.
Yeah, and he could help with that.
True.
So I guess this is another piece of how you guys could help is is this,
and
why we came down. Yeah, thank you.
Are there any other questions of the council?
I think the program sounds like it's wonderful, and I see that it must be working. My only question is when you place a family out that way, are you going to make sure they have transportation? Because there's not even a Cascade East Transit bus that goes that far.
It's something we'll consider when we're reviewing applicants. And then we have, our Lapine office and Cammie and Vonnie Gurney and Vern. We have amazing, there's an amazing volunteer contingency down here. And so we can travel to them. And I'll let you speak to that.
And we have the one on Dory Road House. We have a female veteran there that is a disabled veteran with three small children and a new baby on the way. As the four-bedroom home, and she and her husband, they ended up getting her dad and stepmom lived here, and they were able to arrange for her to have a car, so we can always try to find a source, and we worked with her dad and stuff really close when we were getting her situated to make sure she had a vehicle. So that's always something that we think about a lot, is they've got to be able to have transportation, and they're not. Because if they're working in Bend, we're not going to put them out here because, but we have lots of people that, veterans that could use the housing and want to be here. I have another female vet who needs housing right now and would love to stay here. Again, her mom is here and she would like to be able to stay here for the emotion. She has a PTSD, she's 40% disabled as well, and her husband is a vet also. And they would like to stay in Lapine because her parents are here, and that's support, And her husband is working at Radio Shack. He just got hired on at Radio Shack here in Lapine. So I'm hoping, maybe that's a person that would be a good candidate for at least the one part of the house.
Greg, anything?
Do we still have the funds to help with the down payments? Is that what they're...
That's where this money is. That program didn't work well, mm-hmm. and so the money was never spent. So, through various reasons, this is a little bit left, this is what's left over. And so Redmond had some, and we had some, so thought this is an easier way to do it, is mm-hmm. buy the housing.
And I think what you may recall, or you may not recall, but I'm sure Stu did, that in the beginning, when we partnered with Redmond, the council chose to do a down payment. There was two options. Mm-hmm. One, a buy houses, or to assist in a down payment, 20%, and then they made payments for the house forward. Just like our city manager said, that program really didn't work. I think they had one house that was bought under that program here in McLean.
And that was for veterans specifically?
No.
Or just a certain income range?
No, it was income range.
Okay.
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 So here we are at this point when that program didn't work, and it's not worked for a long time.
Right.
So the idea was to move that money out of that kind of program and move it into where we can get group homes or COBO can handle money, or the money can be used in a more useful way.
Yeah.
So
I just wanted to follow up with you. You know, when I first met you, we were talking about this 30-room nursing facility down here.
Next to Holy Redeemer.
And really barked up the ODVA chain, and there's that, you know, the state doesn't even have the funding to actually kind of complete the projects they have going over in the valley for those types of homes. So, and talk to someone about acquisition, but the question would be really how to run it. We were looking at what is it called, or it's a former Catholic church built it. It's right next to the Catholic church.
Right, it's next to Holy Redeemer, built by Catholic church.
Yeah.
And then was closed.
Wasn't by the church, it was private money.
How it was built?
Mm. Well, it was private funding.
At any rate, that was a kind of a dream. It's a beautiful facility, but the reality of funding it, you know, it seemed like it could be funded by veterans benefits, but.
Kathy, do you have any questions for me?
No, I don't. I think what you're doing is great. I was very involved in Vietnam and worked with Radio Shack during that time to get a national program going for them. So I'm just excited about this. I need to come see you.
Yeah, please do, anytime.
Thank you very much.
Yeah, thank you so much for having us.
Truly, thank you for coming.
Yeah, it was great. Thanks a lot. And we'll be in touch and follow up with the emails and see how many folks we can get in our facility.
Thanks.
Thank you.
All right, thank
nice
you. I should get my little thumb drive, too.
Right up here.
Okay, great. Thanks a lot. Appreciate it.
You bet.
Have a good night.
Item number 8 is approval of resolution number 2013-11, a resolution certifying certain unpaid sewage service charges to the Deschutes County Tax Assessor for assessment against the premises service. City Manager?
Oh, that's actually Ashley.
Okay.
Every year, we lien taxes, and Jeremy, on his to-do list this year, is going to revise our ordinances so we won't have to do this anymore. We'll probably have a stricter lien policy. But right now, we only do it annually. There's a list attached if you're interested in the habitual offenders are. I lean the same people every year.
It's basically something the districts had to do it this way, but now that they're in the city, when we change some rules, we won't need to. No other cities have to do this. I talked to the county yesterday.
Yeah.
We're the only city that does it, and it's because we assumed the districts, and that just never got changed in the last year. It's kind of some of those things we've talked about. We did a good job of getting the customers coming in, and some other things we just never got to in the last 12 months. So next year, hopefully, that will be switched. We won't have to do it. But Ashley, you know, she said, hey, you got to get this one done. And she was on it a couple weeks ago, and then the county called me and said, where is it? So they even said, get it in. I told her we'd have it to her tomorrow. So make sure that gets signed before you leave tonight, Mayor.
All right. I'll do that. What we need to do now is we need to move to review this and approve it. So go ahead. I'll ask for council input at this time. Stu?
We've done this before, so it's kind of...
Well, I don't know that you did last year.
I did. Yeah. I've done it every year until the end of all time.
So it's housekeeping?
Yes.
Okay. That's all I need.
Any questions, Kathy?
If I remember correctly, we did talk about the once a year thing, but now as far as liens and that type of thing, you can go in anytime?
Not yet.
Not yet.
Jeremy will work on that. So we're hoping we don't have to do this annual liening. Okay. We'll have some better enforcement of collections. And when that time comes, you're probably going to have a lot of counts. At that time, we'll give you guys a heads up that we're going to probably have to write off just to clean house, okay. Start anew. But we're just trying to collect on those accounts now and doing the best we can.
Greg, and utility, why do we continue service when they're not paying their bill?
Have you ever shut off sewer service? Yes.
Well, water.
We can't shut off water for not paying sewer because they're separate agencies right now. Now, once we have one utilities department, we will be able to shut off water for sewer.
Okay.
But, and if you shut off water, that shuts off sewer.
Yeah.
Yes.
Basically, it does.
Nothing in, nothing's coming out.
Right. Because, I mean, you know, any other utility that, you know, pay your bill, eventually they cut you off.
But see, like she's saying, you know, if you look, again, historically, you had two separate districts, so.
Right.
You, because once someone didn't pay their sewer bill, the water district couldn't do it. And we adopted, when we, remember, we just adopted all their rules and regulations. And so during this last year, and Jeremy, you know, I can go back to a lot of emails where Jeremy was saying, hey, we need to okay, we did that because we had to get it all done. But we need to now go through and make them fit the city. And that just never rose to the priorities in the last 12 months.
Like you haven't had anything else going on.
Well, with it, I mean, for me and Jeremy, we talked about it today.
Karen, do you have anything on this?
Other than I think we should collect this whichever way we can.
Yeah. I think it's well spoken to here in the fact that we had a system before that we've used. We haven't changed that system. We're in the process of changing it. And in that process, we need to do one more.
Mm-hmm.
And it's.
I mean, just it doesn't make it good. I just. Okay. Yeah. It's pretty housekeeping, I should say.
A motion to adopt resolution 2013-11. The resolution certifying certain unpaid sewage services charged to the Deschutes County tax assessor assessment against the premises serviced.
I so move.
Second.
Moved and seconded. Any discussion? Hearing none. All those in favor?
Aye.
Aye.
It's unanimous. Lee approved.
Thank you.
We now have on it item number 9, which is EDCO and the LED update and MOU and hiring process. And
the MOU was signed. You authorized us to finish it out. We did that and it is all signed. EDCO signed it and it is all done, filed, and ready to go. So tomorrow we had a quick led meeting. We were actually, it's our normal day, but we're only meeting we had to. We're meeting at 10 o'clock tomorrow, and Roger and a couple other folks, or one at least, are coming down from EDCO, and we'll spend an hour, hour and a half talking about what their thoughts are, how they plan to advertise, where they plan to advertise. We'll need a couple people from the LED committee to help serve on the interview committee, so we'll get a couple volunteers for that, and hopefully we'll get someone here. You know, they have a hiring group down there that they use and a review group that, like a firm that actually goes out. They just did this for Sisters and did not hire. They interviewed, you know, we did that with our city manager once, you know, put it back out. So it's not uncommon. They put it out in Sisters for a halftime position and no one fit what they were looking for. So we hope that it works better here, but it'll get out there.
Is it my understanding that we're going to put a couple of people on the interview?
The LED committee will, yeah.
Yeah, I mean, they will.
Yeah.
Okay.
The city isn't.
Yeah. That was my point.
Yeah. And it could be that we have someone.
Stu? Go for it.
You said Sisters put out and didn't hire.
Right.
Wasn't there some conversation that I thought Sisters hired, and that's why our committee was in. We had to get on the ball.
Well, no, they did. No, they had the ads out. They interviewed.
Okay.
Just nobody. They just didn't like anyone. So they're starting over.
Okay.
Which could happen here.
But it could benefit us.
Roger said he wasn't sure. He thought there were a couple that maybe would have fit possibly over here. You know, Sisters. We've said a couple years ago, when there's turmoil, people are reluctant to leave jobs. You have a 3-2 split at that council. I mean, they just vote 3-2 on things. And, you know, Eileen Stein, the city manager, was run off. So you have an instability. So people are a little reluctant to, they don't know what they're getting into, because what's the philosophy over there? You know, and whether or not, how that affects us, because we've had some changes. You know, you got the Sun River area, you have a lot of land in between here and there that's pretty appealing to people. Sisters is a tougher for economic development from a sense of industrial. Because, you know, they're pretty much retail-y. So, we'll see. I guess we'll find out. If neither one of us get anyone, then maybe they'll have to adjust something.
Okay.
So tomorrow, Tim will be here. And okay. I think Sue will be here.
I'd like to take 5 minutes at this time.
Okay. And then, no, I'm sorry. Oh, we, then there's an annual meeting later in the afternoon, too. So.
Yeah.
The annual meeting.